We'd like to know how he ended up as a celebrant for your wedding.
Oh, you want the real story? Why not? So basically, there was one night we were kind of back in Sydney and Bondi when Drew and I were living together. I started seeing my now wife, Anna, and we have an open door policy at home.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
Hello and welcome to House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe. We are all back in studio today and we have a great show lined up for you all. In part two, we're going to have an Aussie special. Fergus and Ian are joined by Leinster Scott Vardy and all the way from Los Angeles, Adam Ashley Cooper. Part two is pretty good as well and it is our pleasure to welcome Munster and Ireland star and recent British and Irish Lions squad call-up, Tadhg Byrne. Welcome to the show. Great to have you on.
Thank you. Cheers for having me.
It's been a mad few weeks for you, I imagine.
Yeah, no, the last week and a bit's been a hell of a week, in fairness.
Yeah, I'd say your phone hasn't stopped hopping.
Yeah, well, first 2 days now, I was probably glued to it, in fairness, just trying to reply to everyone. And it probably took a few days to sink in. And to be honest, it probably is still sinking in. I got a text off one of my mates there the other day, just being like, I actually can't believe your line, and I probably just hit home again in that moment. So, I still have to pinch myself to realise that it actually happened.
I know, and there's so much more ahead of you. Where were you when you got the message or the text or the email or the phone call, whatever it was? And
well, you actually find out at the exact same time as everyone else. That's probably so. It's nervy enough. I think we had a team run that morning. And we all went for a coffee afterwards, just outside, and we were kind of hanging around 12 o'clock. And I kind of made the decision to go back home to watch it with my missus. And thankfully I did, because she was actually a nervous wreck back at the house. She was there cleaning the place, trying to keep herself busy. I sat down with her to watch it. And I actually wasn't nervous at all until the moment they just said, we're going to announce the squad now. And I just... My stomach took a turn and I felt sick, and I was like, oh, got so nervous. But obviously when my name got announced, it was pretty special.
So you're obviously Byrne, so B, one of the first names called out on the squad. I know myself, being a C, when your name gets called, you just completely zone out. You don't think about it. Like, did you have to, like, you know, look at it back again and figure out who was picked, because you just kind of zoned out after you heard your own name?
Yeah, pretty much. Obviously the backs got... I remember from watching it 4 years ago, I was almost sure they just did it all alphabetically, and then they said, oh, the backs are first. So that was kind of like, oh, I'm going to have to wait this out. So just listening to that. But then I knew, obviously, when the forwards were going to come out, I'd know straight away. When my name got called out, me and my missus obviously just celebrated together, and I barely paid attention for the next couple of minutes until they put up all the names on the screen, and I just paused it and went through it myself, and just, it was pretty cool.
It almost doesn't feel real, the fact that it was done, like, virtually and, like, all... Like, they made... It was great, in fairness. The announcement was really, really good. But, you know, it's different, obviously, with COVID, that, you know, you couldn't be with more people or celebrate more.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was... You know, I think it was quite nice for me. I was happy to just watch it with my fiancé, to be honest, because... That's a pretty special memory as well, just the two of us getting to celebrate it. It'd be pretty cool as well to watch it as a group, but, you know, there's always two ways of looking at that. You know, if you watch it as a team, there's going to be lads disappointed as well. So, I was pretty happy the way I got to enjoy the news.
Yeah, great to have so many Irish guys involved as well. But what about the Scarlets boys that you would have known from being over there? You know, you'll know a good few going over that'll make it, I suppose, extra fun as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think I was texting Gareth Davis probably a couple of hours after the announcement. Me and him would have been pretty close. So we were just saying we'd be looking forward to togging out again together since the Scarlets days. And then I was chatting to Liam Williams as well. So, you know, I played with all those boys. So it'd be great to get to play alongside them again.
Your journey as well, I suppose, to this point, Tadhg, has kind of been... The road less travelled, which I think, you know, makes it cooler. From, you know, being in Leinster when you were there, didn't make it, and then going away and forging your way, you know, Scarlets back to Munster, eventually, you know, getting picked for Ireland after a period where maybe, you know, a lot of people were saying you should have got more caps as well. And then, you know, before the Six Nations, there was probably arguments over who was going to start in the second row, who was going to start in the back row. Were you in that conversation? And now, from the Six Nations, you'd certainly be one of the first names on the team sheet, and you're travelling over. Like, it's been pretty unbelievable when you think about it that way.
Brady forgot to say that you were in sixth year when he was in first year as well. You left. You were there for
want to let the listeners know just how old I am. Thanks for that, Emer. Yeah.
So 5 years left of my career. So.
A bit more than that, man. Don't worry. Wingers go out earlier.
Look, I think it's certainly a road. It was a longer journey for sure, and you know, I don't think anyone would have guessed or put money on me being in this situation. It was about 5 or 6 years ago when Leinster told me they didn't see me playing for them anymore. Didn't want me or whatever. So to make that journey into Scarlets, and obviously my career just took off there, and I just think it comes down to timing. Like, timing is essentially everything. Like, I got picked up by Scarlets last minute because they decided they needed a second row, to then get my first kind of opportunity in Scarlets because on 2 weeks on the bounce, because two players were having their first kid both weeks. So then I was put into the team for those 2 weeks and obviously played well. And then from that point on, I kept my position. But if they didn't have the kids then, I probably wouldn't be here, you know.
So you're putting it all down to that, basically.
It's essentially, look, a lot of it's, look, obviously you have to put in the work and all
of
that.
You need to visit those kids. Buy them some good Christmas presents this Christmas.
For sure. Like, it's just, like, even coming back here, and then, like, it's luck for me, but it's obviously unluck for other people. Like, coming into the Six Nations just gone, as I've said a few times, like, I don't think, like, personally going into it, I just wanted to be in the Irish squad, and then my aim was to get into a 23. Now, you'd say it's luck for me, but it's obviously unlucky for the lads who got injured, like Quinn Rue. He had to leave camp because he was injured. Then obviously Hendy was only back from a long-term injury, so they decided to put me in and start that first game against Wales. And you know, there's obviously an element, you have to be ready for those opportunities, and luckily for me, I managed to put in a performance to keep my spot for the following game, and managed to continue to do so for that Six Nations. But you know, as I say, especially around now, timing was everything, and there was a lot of luck involved as well, I think.
Like, you say it's luck, but at the end of the day, as athletes, you know, you make your own luck. Like, there's a lot of hard work put in behind that nobody does see, and they only see you playing those 80 minutes or so, but there's a lot of hard work that goes in behind it. But going back to the Leinster, you're saying Leinster didn't want you. Like, that's tough at the start of your career to have, I suppose, that kind of a conversation with the coach.
Yeah.
And it must have been difficult to pick yourself up to head over to Scarlets and essentially move your whole life over. Like, that takes resilience as a player as well.
Yeah, well, I think it was a big decision at the time. I think my uncle only the other day was laughing because he was telling me I should just kind of give it up.
At the time,
he was like, oh, look, it's been a tough row. Maybe it's time you just kind of continue, because I was doing a master's at the time, and I didn't get to finish the master's, but I was doing it at the time, so it was kind of a decision, do I continue with the master's and just go out into the real world or take one last chance at rugby? And I think my mum was probably sick of seeing, like, the highs and the lows of those last few months of, will I be in a team, won't I be in a team? So she was also probably a bit like, oh, maybe it's best to just kind of focus on the masters. But you know, when I sat down with my mum and dad, and that was the decision, that I just said I wanted it one more crack, and they got behind me, and thankfully I decided to make that decision.
So basically you're saying that they never expected you to make the Lions tour.
Pretty much. I don't think that was even the conversation.
That uncle won't be getting any gear from the trip, I'd imagine. But you know what it points out, I think, like, to me, I think it should point out to anyone that's listening, like, and someone that's maybe coming through a school system that's a good player, or a youth system, or in their clubs, you know, because there are only four provinces in Ireland, and it doesn't always fall people's way. And I remember when you came in to the academy, you were a lot younger, and there was other guys your age who were getting opportunities, and that must have been frustrating for you. Because I literally remember any time I was going in getting strapped, you were on the physio bed, you were injured the whole time. You know, and it's, as you say, it's timing, but, you know, timing is one thing, but it's about perseverance, because some guys think, oh, I'm not going to make it in the Irish system, so that's me done. And you do see a lot of guys and a lot of players that, that don't crack on, that are good enough.
Yeah, for sure. And I think a big part of that as well is, like, you know, when you do have those injuries, you can, a perception, or, you know, the coaches and the staff and even the players kind of can look at you and put you in a category, and it's hard to come out of that kind of persona of way people, the players, look at you. And if you're willing to move and make that move abroad or wherever you do get an opportunity, you're getting a fresh start, so you're getting an opportunity to kind of reinvent yourself, essentially, and show coaches what you can do. And it's not just a thing of going, oh, look, should we play this guy, or will he get injured? That kind of feel to it. So, yeah, like, I think it probably should happen a bit more. I think when you're growing up as well, like, you know, you're growing up in Leinster, and you're probably all you want to do is play for Leinster. So that's your main goal. And then when it doesn't work, it can be quite deflating for a lot of people, and they kind of lose hope a bit. But
so there you said it. You grew up wanting to play for Leinster, and here you are, Munster man at the moment. So to take us back to 2014, you had a phenomenal individual season in that Pro 14 win against Munster with Scarlets. And what was the thought process around the move to Limerick? Was it them or was it you? You know, obviously they saw you playing phenomenal that year.
They came to me, and I think I was never going to go back to Leinster. It just, as I was leaving, there was always going to be a bit of resentment there, and that's just the way it is. Like, I try not to say, I often look back and go, no, I don't. But then sometimes I'm like, okay, there obviously was at the time. So that was never going to be the case. And then when Munster came, it was a club that I probably tried to go to before I signed for Scarlets, but they were pretty stacked. And then they came to me when I was at Scarlets. So it was a massive opportunity, and I obviously want to play for my country. So it was an easy decision. It's a club with massive history. It's a club that's been massively successful. And so it was a bit of a no-brainer when they did come to me. It was like, to get to go home back to Ireland and have an opportunity to play for Ireland as well was huge. So yeah, it was an easy decision.
It wasn't long after that you got called into the Irish setup. You know, were you just there hoping to get, you know, be on the 23, or did you have aspirations to start?
Yeah, for sure. I think it was my last year in Scarlets. I had signed for Munster, so I was actually disappointed not to be in that Six Nations squad, because I thought there might have been an opportunity, because I'd already committed to being back in Ireland, that I'd be in that Six Nations squad, but that wasn't to be. So that was disappointing. And then I got obviously called into for the Australia tour. And at the time, I just, all you care about is getting that first cap, is just whether it's off the bench or starting. That was the goal. But then once you get your first cap, now it's about getting into the 23. And then when you get into the 23, it's about getting into the starting team. So I think from the start, it was just to be involved and just to get a cap. And then as you get them, your goals start to increase. And
you're never content, really, as a player, are you?
No, you're always striving for more. And I think that's just the competitive nature in any sports person.
So you're basically saying, after this year's Six Nations, after getting nominated as a you know, potential player of the tournament, you were thinking...
He was disappointed not to be captain. Yeah.
He was actually
disappointed with his fiancée. God, I can't believe I'm not captain, you know?
So, but what we're saying is, like, we were here chatting about you for weeks. Like, I think there wasn't one show that didn't mention you and Robbie Henshaw for a Lions test. The media do a lot of talking. We're players, we know they don't always get it right. You know, they do a lot of talking, but it's not necessarily what the coaches are thinking, or how the game plan is, or, you know, we know a lot more on the inside than they do. But was there ever a moment that you were like, Jesus, I actually couldn't make a Lions tour? Or did you just put it to the back of your head because you didn't want to get your hopes up?
Definitely tried to put it to the back of my head, but it's an impossible task. With, you know, as players, you do, and Fergal probably know, and yourself as well, you try not to look at media as much as you can, because it can be, there's some nasty things out there as well that can hurt your confidence. So you do, the last thing you want to do is be searching on Twitter and or whatever the news feeds, like, on what's being said about you. But it's your parents, it's your family, it's everyone else around you who's actually doing all the reading for you and telling you about it, even though you're not asking about it. So you'd be lying if at some point the hope started creeping in, and then it started becoming a reality in my head, and I was like, oh, maybe I have a chance. And that's why, when probably the announcement came around, that I knew I did have a chance, probably because of everything that had been going on in the weeks beforehand, and all the teams, my dad or whoever would be telling me that this person put you in the Lions squad and this person...
Craig didn't put you in.
Yeah. Sure,
I think he did, actually.
So, an old Clongonian.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it obviously creeps in at some point, and then from that point on, you're just like, oh, I really do hope I make it.
It's impossible to kind of get away from that at the moment, isn't it? Fair enough, you're not going to buy the paper and pick it up or in a cafe, but, you know, 90% of people our age are on social media platforms, and even if you're not following certain things, you know, you were one of the people that was getting talked about a lot, and there's so much exposure to Lions, it's very hard not to see some of it. So it's a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you could be even just walk, like, I'd be walking my dog with the missus, and a guy would stop. He'd be like, just, you'd be on the Lions now soon. Best of luck over there. Like, right, well, hasn't been selected. So, but like, it comes from every angle that... So it obviously creeps in, and yeah, I was certainly hopeful when the announcement was made.
And with the announcement, like, for someone who obviously there isn't a women's Lions team, it's never going to be an option for us, but it might be in the future.
Yeah. You would have made it though, because you're in the top 15 for the... You were number 15? You were from the Six Nations?
Again, I'm not getting my hopes up again here like Ty. I'd say there's lots of other good fullbacks around the place. Yeah. But...
I would like to think they'd bring in a Lions, though, for the women.
They had talked about it this year, but it'd just be all English players, to be honest. Like,
it'd be a pretty cool thing to have, though, wouldn't it? Give people more incentive, and I reckon it would bring up the standard,
I think would, yeah. But I suppose what I was going to ask there was, how does it, like, did you just say, look, I've had a good season, you know, maybe I'll just head home and watch it, or, does every player, like, head home with the hope of being announced?
I wouldn't say every player. I think there was a few hopefuls for sure, and it's probably the lads around you as well, your teammates around you as well. They're probably telling you as well that you have a good chance.
You better head home then, or like, finish up
exactly,
your coffee.
Exactly. So there's probably a handful of us that would have went home to watch it in the hopes of our names being called out, and, you know, there's obviously going to be disappointed lads there as well, and that's the nature of the beast, I suppose. Yeah. Like,
it's funny you say that, because before New Zealand was the last one, wasn't it, before South Africa?
Mm.
So they lost in the last test.
They drew, didn't they?
Or they drew, they're correct. But they get to hold it or something, because...
Is it?
They got to hold the trophy because they'd won it the last time they played or something. So, but my point was going to be that before that squad was picked, it was the same thing on Sky Sports... or whatever, Warren Gatland at the time was announcing it. But we had all just come from training, and everyone was in the cafeteria in Leinster.
Yeah.
And that's brutal. Like, you are around, essentially, it's another family, right, when you're in a squad, really.
Exactly.
But again, it's tough, because you got guys...
It's great when you get picked, but if you don't...
Oh, but that's what I'm trying to say, because
you see the videos of the lads, like, I think, the Gloucester, I've seen the video of the Gloucester boys watching it together, and so you rang. When Chris Harris got picked, everyone went mad, which is really cool if that's you. Mm-hmm. But then, obviously,
the double-edged sword,
the lads who don't get picked, it's kind of, what do you do?
And was there, like, obviously, with even like the Rainbow Cup, it was, you know, everyone's going to South Africa. And it was like, no, we're just going to do Northern Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere, and no trip to South Africa. And was there ever a doubt in your mind that, you know, this Lions tour won't actually go ahead?
Yeah, for sure. I think probably before I was even thinking I'd any chance in it, to be honest. I was more kind of thinking from a spectator's point of view around Christmas time and that. So I was kind of like, oh, I don't see it happening. But then as then all the rumours kind of started about whether it would start, whether it would be in the UK or not, which probably seemed like a good backup plan realistically, especially with how they're getting on with COVID and stuff. They'll be back to normal by then, so they would have had full stadiums, which would have been cool. But, you know, I'm not going to complain that it's in South Africa.
Yeah, I think we were chatting to a few South African guests last weekend, and they were kind of hopeful that there would be some element of crowds, even if it was just kind of reduced capacity. But I suppose you can look forward to that.
Well, play in front of any crowd would be great.
Yeah, I know, even like more than 100 people would be great. I suppose you're down in Munster with Demian D'Alende and Ardis Lyman. Not sure how his injury is coming along, but is there much kind of, you know, banter among you guys with the South Africans? You know, you might come up against them.
Not really. They haven't been mentioned too much. Damien's one of the most chill guys you'll come across. He probably hasn't even thought about it at this stage. He just takes life as it comes. Like, he's a great character, in fairness to him. And obviously for Orgy, it's completely dependent on how he gets on over the next few weeks. You know, hopefully he will be back for his sake, but I'm not going to make that call for him.
Yeah, you're not too really bothered about that. You can stay there, you're fine. Would you be hopeful for, obviously, on our teams, when we picked our teams and when the whole media have picked their teams, and even Sean O'Brien in like on House of Rugby UK has said about how versatile you are, either a six or a seven. Has it been discussed where you will be?
I don't know if I'll be playing seven.
Seven's pushing.
I really don't mind. Like, I'm sure probably if I was looking at the squad, I'd probably be, if I was to guess, I'd say more chance of a six than in the row, but I'd be more than happy to play in either position, to be honest with you. If I was on the starting squad, I'd be absolutely thrilled to be there.
It's a great string to have to your bow, though, in terms of covering both, because we talked, the three of us were saying there, you know, how greedy you get when you achieve a goal, but then you're looking for the next thing. And really now, you've been picked in the extended squad, but everyone's going over there is going to be to be in the 23.
Absolutely,
you know, and to be involved in the test matches. Yeah. And you're a guy that, you know, can play across the back row and the second row. You know, there's specialist positions. It's great, but I think it could be a real strong point for you to get into a few of those 23s. Hopefully,
yeah. But I suppose at the same time, if you look at the squad, there's a lot of lads like. Maratoge plays six as well. Courtney Laws plays six as well. You know, even Henderson used to play six. So it seems like, in terms of the lads who have been selected in the second row, a lot of them have that versatility as well. So he'll certainly have options there, that's for sure.
Is there any guys like that now that you've played against in the last few years that you're going to have to put on a nice face and be really friendly to them after your battles on the field?
No, not at all. I don't think. I'm actually very chilled in terms of that. Like, whatever happens on the field, I'm pretty relaxed. Shake your hand afterwards and just happy to have a beer with you. I wouldn't hold any grudges, that's for sure.
We'll head over to House of Rugby UK and here's Sean O'Brien. He was talking about how you used to be a real nightmare to go against in training. We're going to play a little clip here.
What do you think about Ty Burnshaw? I thought he impressed me in the back row scene. I think he's got a great shot because he covers...
Yeah, he covers...
Yeah. It makes him, for me, pretty much a banker to go on that tour.
Would you believe, when Tig was with Leinster, I used to hate training against him because he was one of these lads that was an absolute pain in the hole. I swear to God, he used to frustrate me so much. He'd be lying on the wrong side, holding you in rooks, doing all these things that you want a young fella to do with training. He was so competitive. And he's just really come into his own now as well. So he has been unbelievable. He's probably someone, though, that I expect that from now with his performances with Munster. But I suppose cementing his place in the Ireland team now. And he can play anywhere, as you said, Sam. He can play six, seven. The only place that I wouldn't be so comfortable with him is eight, probably. But he can cover the second row. And he's just showing up every single time, and he has been that pain in the hole for oppositions. He's one of those lads who you'd love to thump when you're training against him. And he's been brilliant. And I put up a post last week. I just said this fella is playing some stuff at the minute. So he's definitely in the picture, I think, now in Gatz's plans, I'd say.
So a real nightmare. Is that something you would pride yourself to be on the field, like the pest, he was saying? He still had that stuff in rucks.
Yeah, for sure. And I think when he's talking back in the Leinster days, I certainly was that. Especially my last year, I was on a rolling contract, essentially. So I had the summer for 2 months, then I had a four-month contract, and then they signed me on for six months. So I particularly remember being an absolute pest in training. And me and Shawnee had a few run-ins, all right. But as I said earlier, you'd walk off the pitch and laugh about it later. But yeah, I think, you know, them days definitely stood to me going forward, especially into Scarlets and stuff. And, you know, I think it's certainly probably always, as Wiggs always says to me, my point of difference is around that area, around in the ruck in terms of turnovers and stuff. So it's just something I enjoy doing. And so I suppose, yeah, pest would probably be the right word.
Yeah, Matt was saying a few weeks ago as well that when, like, Ulster do analysis on Munster, that they'll be like, right, try and get away, like, stay away from you if all possible, yourself and Chris Clote at the breakdown. Yeah. I'm sure there's a few battles at Munster training, actually, with yourself, Peter Manny, Clote at the breakdown. Must be a nightmare.
Know, yeah, no, we certainly have a few boys, CJ, Pete, Chris. There's certainly a good few lads there who are good over the ball, for sure.
Yeah, going back to your Leinster Academy days, so Ferg told a story a few weeks ago about how you used to work as a pizza delivery guy. So is that true? And you actually delivered
We're going to keep your feet on the ground here, by the way. Just after hearing all this lovely stuff about yourself, Lions. The Lions,
we're going to back get to your roots.
There's nothing embarrassing about this. I don't know why everyone loves it. yeah, deliver pizzas for base. I think it was about 3 years I did it. I used to know who was ordering the pizzas. A lot of the lads would be surprised when I turn up at their door, in fairness.
You turn up to Sean Cronin's door on purpose just to hand deliver it?
No, in fairness.
I can imagine that unsettling him, though.
Yeah, well, you know, Sean, he's a very unsettled character in the best of times. But yeah, no, I did see your little clip where you said he thought it was he was getting punked, which is, I'd actually forgotten about it, to be honest with you. So. But yeah, no, I certainly delivered to a good few of the Leinster boys back then, but sure, you know, you have to make money somehow.
You did, you absolutely did. Another guest said on the show, I can't even remember who it was, but that you were really laid back in the change name. That
it was
like
Ronan.
It was Ronan. Yeah. Like that you could be like,
no,
10
he said that he could be playing like, some lads are banging their heads against the wall and, you know, they're proper revving themselves up, and Ty would pretty much be playing Candy Crush, you know, before he's about to throw his jersey on there to go out.
My go-to game is actually chess, would you believe? Yeah, they always laugh at, Niall always loves the story, we're playing Exeter in Exeter, and I like to play chess. Like, I don't like to be on the pitch too early, and so I don't really see the need of getting changed. The second you get into change, you're there like an hour before need to be out, essentially. So I'll sit back and play chess, but I couldn't get Wi-Fi where we were, because I couldn't get signal. So I was going around asking everyone what the Wi-Fi code was.
The kickers were going out in the field, the passes are kicking.
Lads were looking at me like, what the hell is this lad doing? But yeah.
You could literally pawn it off and just say that, you know, it's you thinking, you know, getting your head set, getting your mindset right for the game.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's just kind of relax, and then once you get into the warm-up, you flick a switch, don't you? Well, I know some people aren't like that. Some people need the build-up, some people don't, whereas I'm very much able to just kind of relax a bit until I need to kind of get switched on.
Courses for courses, kind of, isn't it? Like, you know, the way going to games, you'd have some of your teammates that like a chat going to going to the stadium, and maybe even a bit of a laugh, you know, not over the top, but, you know, lighthearted stuff. And then other people might be proper listening to their their pump up music and they get to win. Yeah. So it just depends on the individuals. It's funny.
Absolutely.
Will you be taking your chess over to South Africa with you?
Yeah, it's an app on a phone. Actually, I think all the Leinster lads are mad into it. After that Queen's Gambit, I seen a load of them playing it during Irish camp.
That's great. Tig, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure to talk to you and huge best of luck in South Africa with the Lions.
Cheers, appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
We'll be back in just a moment with Ian Ferg and Scott Friday with Adam Ashley Cooper.
House of Rugby Ireland. Tell us what you think by comment and rating us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and Google Podcasts.
Right, lads, Adam Ashley Cooper and Scott Fardy, you're very welcome to House of Rugby Ireland. How are you?
Yeah, good. There it is.
Yeah, good, fellas. Thanks for having us.
Great to have you on. Well done last night, Swoop. Another good win.
Yeah, another W. particularly a nice little win at a special venue, SoFi Stadium. The Americans are carrying on like it's arguably the best stadium in the world, so... They did put about $6 billion into it, so it'll want to deliver.
$6 billion different lines on the pitch as well. Was that confusing playing on that surface?
Oh, mate, it is. It's very confusing because you know me, I'm very symmetrical and all about boundaries and lines and everything in order. So it's quite challenging. But usually we play at the LA Coliseum, which is just a grass deck and has the field marked out. With the respective rugby lines, but last night's challenging for sure.
Yeah, it's great following you guys on Instagram. The social media manager is doing a great job following the Guillotini brand. How are you finding it over there?
Yeah, everyone's pitching on their socials, that's for sure. Oh, mate, everyone's really enjoying themselves over here. As you see, you've seen a lot of good stuff on social media, but we have been training pretty hard. We've been ripping in and working well, but... In terms of the lifestyle here, mate, it's a great change up. California. Unfortunately, today's the first day I've seen it rain since I've been here, so it's a little odd for me, but we'll crack on.
I was hoping you were going to be on your bike.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. Well, I mean, if the sun was shining, definitely, but you've got a Super 73 too, I hear. They're a good bit of gear, aren't they, Mads?
They certainly are. I'm not quite riding around in the Budgie Smugglers up in Belfast, but they're a good piece of kit, all right.
Oh, mate, you should give it a crack.
Not with my package.
You'd look good on a bike with your Budgies. Oh, I've missed those scenes.
Oh, how are the McNulty brothers getting on?
Yeah, they're going really well. A couple of Irish lads. You always need a couple of Irish boys in your team. I mean, Harry talks a lot, but they're good lads. And we've also got Luke Carty too, I think, who was a part of the Carnick Academy. So, yeah, they're a good bunch of boys.
Which academy?
Which academy, though?
Carnick? Come on, boys. Take it easy.
I asked Madzo before you came on, you know, how come, you know, why yourself and Matt Giddo went over to the LA Guillotinis, and Madzo assured me it was for, you know, to win trophies and have a real rugby challenge, you know?
Yeah, absolutely that, mate. I think that for me personally, I got home from the 2019 World Cup and I was a little bit just unsatisfied with how that tournament went, how potentially the finish of my career could have gone. And I actually started having conversations with people outside the game in terms of what I could be doing next and transitioning into. But Adam Gilchrist, the owner of F45, who obviously just obtained two teams over here in the MLR League, gave me a call and convinced me otherwise in terms of hanging the boots up to come over and play a little bit of footy. And so I agreed to terms, and I thought that there'd never been an opportunity in my career to play rugby in the States. And I've always wanted to live here. I've always wanted to experience and embrace the American lifestyle because everything is big and better here. And it's certainly that. And I just thought it'd be a great opportunity. So, and also being able to finish a career on my terms. So I think that's exactly why I'm here, and that's why Matt's here.
A fair play. Speaking of people that are finishing their careers, you played with this man that's in studio with us many times for Aussie, and I was lucky enough to play with him for a number of seasons in Leinster. I'd like to hear what you kind of have to say about the guy, because for me, you know, and staying in one club, we had some great recruits from abroad, and we've had some really poor ones. And the ones that stand out for me are the likes of, you know, Rocky Alsom, Easton Asewa, Chris Whitaker, Rickard Strauss, you know, and then you've got, you know, yourself, Scott. And I'd just love to hear what you have to say about the guy, because when he came in to Leinster, you know, you don't know a whole lot about an individual. You just know about the player they were in the field. And really, I think that, you know, Scotty, great professional, but, you know, really good crack. And I think you mixed perfectly with the boys. I think Johnny was quoted saying that you're Saturday Scotty, because you're not too keen on the training, but he always turns up for the 80 minutes, you know.
Oh, is that that question directed at me?
Oh, sorry, it wasn't really a question, as you could tell. It was actually more of a long-winded statement.
Scott was talking about himself.
Thanks for.
If we're talking about Fards, absolutely, let's pump his tires. I mean, one of the great journeymen, one of the great, like you said, Saturday football players, is a guy who absolutely rips in 80 minutes. And I mean, with a mug like that, you know, he likes to stick his head in the wrong places and puts his body on the line and has a total disregard for his rig. So you need guys like that in the team.
100%. And your time with Leinster, Scotty, I suppose, you know, what is your plans next? And do you have anything in the pipeline as to what you're going to do? Or
I'll head back to Australia in the short term. So, you know, catch up with family and then, you know, see what pans out after that. So it's been very hard from over here to sort things out. So, looking forward to getting back to Australia. It's been probably 3 years since I've been back there. So, haven't seen a lot of guys. Had two kids since I've been here. And obviously, with the pandemic, there's a lot of people haven't met my second child and things like that. So, need to get everyone home and say good day before we do anything else.
Yeah, for sure. I think when you have the toddlers, you realise how important the family is. And with COVID as well, it's probably been pretty tough being away from your and Penny's, you know, close-knit family and that.
Yeah, it's been tough. I mean, a lot of people going throughout the world, and obviously got to go back and do my 2 weeks quarantine in Australia and things like that. So it has been fairly isolating, but, you know, the community here in Ireland's great, and it feels like home for us. And you've got some great people here and great people within Leinster, and we've made some great friends at a time in Ireland and really enjoyed it.
Yeah, the first time I probably came across you after a game in person was you guys had toured here in 2013. Yourself and Adam were playing that day, and there was we had heard in the Irish squad that the Aussies had come over and they were enjoying themselves, you know. We just didn't know to what extent, but there was rumours that they'd been in Copperface Jacks for a few nights of the week. Do you have anything to say about that, Adam?
Copperface Jacks, never heard of it. Look, all I remember is that we went for a lovely team dinner at, I think it was Jamie Heaslip's restaurant, somewhere there in town. And then we went to Red Temple just for a couple. Yeah. And we were looking for a nice little diner on the way back to the hotel to, you know, get a bit of a nightcap and a bit of a feed. And we were pointed in the direction of a Copperfield Jacks.
Copperfield Jacks, yeah.
Sent us there.
You like the what?
It was the locals at Tennessee. We thought we were going to a diner. Yeah. Anyway, we stayed for one or two. Yeah.
But it seems like Heaslip tried to send you boys out in the piss so that you'd lose, but unfortunately it was probably one of your better performances as an Aussie team there for a few years.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know I've had these conversations with Mads. I think there's a lot to be said for a couple of beers during the week with your teammates and getting away from the game and bonding and forging those stronger relationships just outside the game, not keeping it keeping it very relaxed and making sure you're finding that balance, because, you know, that obviously transfers onto the pitch on a weekend.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest thing during my time in France with Jisoo. Like, I'd come from the Leinster environment, which is very intense, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but my ability to kind of switch off from, you know, going from training hard and then switching off back to training hard probably wasn't there. It was probably, you know, too intense for a few years there. But like, you know, looking at you, you're 37 now. You've had a great career. Like, talking about that life balance, like, I think you get that right.
Yeah, thanks, Mads. I think I have. And that's what footy's about. I think footy's about balance. It's about, you know, loving what you do. And, you know, we're very grateful we're in a position to play a game that we love, and we get to compete on weekends and most days of the week. So I think you've just got to be, I think you've just got on top of your balance and making sure you're getting away from the game too, which only creates that love and that the more enjoyment for the game.
Yeah. Back on that night out, like back in 2013, like obviously you had like a couple of nights out start of the week, like no big deal. Like, you know, no rules were broken. It wasn't like COVID was around at the time or anything like that. But like it obviously hit the papers in Ireland, and I'm sure it was a nightmare for you guys dealing with the press back home and whatnot. But it was amazing, not for us, but, you know, for how the Aussie team came together and kind of that galvanised you, and you almost had that siege mentality and then went out and put, you know, a great performance at the weekend. Like, I think you guys probably would have beaten anyone that day.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, fortunately for us, it certainly worked. I mean, we went out for a few beers on a Tuesday night, and look, I understand that it's a professional game now and you need to treat your preparation professionally. But like I said, and you said, there's a lot to be said for a few beers with your teammates during the week. For us, with the outcome and the result of that night, like you said, the media on top of our backs, it certainly brought us together, and we had that kind of pack mentality going into the Irish on Saturday. And then I think we put a record score on the Irish that weekend. So,
hey, we're going to have to cut you if you keep that up, Adam.
Well, you blokes keep circling back to that Tuesday night. I don't know what it is with the Irish and this Dublin six. Yeah.
But if I'm not going on about Scotty's bio, Mads keeps talking about this bloody night out, you know?
But it was a good night, though.
Yeah. I remember the Honey Badger came in, or Nick Cummins came in to talk to a couple of lads in our change room, and, you know, we had our tail between our legs after losing, but I think it was by around 20 points or so. And he just starts harping on about how good a city is Dublin to go out in. And we were just like, oh, Jesus, we didn't need to hear that. Thanks.
He was man of the match, the badge that day.
He
scored a couple of tries. He was
unbelievable.
That suits his style, badge. A few points, yeah.
He had an invisible cloak on. Lads couldn't tackle him.
He would have gone fishing Wednesday morning or something like that and then played as well, so he wouldn't have cared. Like.
But back to a bit of the...
cat, old badge.
But back to a little bit of the rugby, but just on the 2011 World Cup, Adam, when Ireland beat Australia 15-6, and I know you're kind of harping on about that record score, but that must have been a tough enough day at the office.
That was a tough one. Thanks for bringing that up, Perk. Cheers, mate. I mean, you know, World Cup arena, and it was the second pool game, I think, wasn't it? And the Irish just turned it on. I think reflecting back on that game, it was a long time ago, so you're testing my memory now, but I remember that the Irish just came out and just physically bashed us. And that's where the game's won, as we all know. They just out-enthused us and bashed us, and then just kind of closed the game out in the end. You know, and they gave us a real lesson.
Yeah, but you lads then having the experience of, you know, the World Cup final as well, that was, you know, what an unbelievable thing to have on your CV. But at the same time, you know, when you play at the top level like you two lads did for so long, it's something that you're always probably going to look back on and be a bit regretful. Would you be, Scotty?
Yeah, it's a huge amount of disappointment from that game. I think, you know, as a group, I think I've said to you before, Ferg, our mindset was all about going and winning it and winning the tournament. And, you know, we'd already painted that picture in our heads and about going home and taking the trophy with us and things like that. So, to fall one game short was just so disappointing as a group. But, you know, now looking back at it, it was a great experience. You know, the games, especially in this COVID times now that we're having with no crowds, it was an amazing tournament to be in London with the crowds that had so many Aussies in the crowd. You know, just a fantastic experience anyway, but obviously tinged with a fair bit of sadness.
Yeah, but for you then, Scotty, touching back on your time in Leinster and before you came, like, Was it mainly Czechs you talked to before you got over here? I know you've had a really successful time, but
I talked to Czechs before you saw it anywhere overseas.
You what?
You wouldn't talk to Czechs before you sign anywhere overseas. You'd leave that off, you know. You're sneaking around the place trying to find your map, trying to find a guy who used to be in Dublin before I signed. Like, meeting him in some hotel out the back somewhere in Dublin before I signed here in 2016. So if Czechs found out that you were meeting someone, it'd be filthy while you're on tour. So,
Fair enough.
Yeah.
What about Rocky? What about someone that you could talk to from Oz? Like,
I talked to Kane Douglas. I talked a bit. He was someone who was here only a year, but obviously it didn't pan out how he would have liked, but he loved the club. And and then Charlie Higgins was obviously here, the S&C, so I knew him well, so got into contact with him. But I knew the pedigree of the club had, produced the players that had produced in the past and the trophies it had won over the last decade. So it really sold itself in terms of coming to a big club to, want to be successful in Europe.
Scoop, obviously you... Oh, sorry, Free.
Sorry, just the golf courses. Like, Scott's not talking about the fucking golf courses. Like, that's the main reason you came to Ireland.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Surprised you haven't come to Ireland for the golf courses yet, Scoop. But obviously you've been in you've been in Japan, France, and now the States. Were you ever tempted to come to one of the Irish provinces?
Funnily enough, I was having a conversation with Leinster after my time at Bordeaux when Laurent Marty decided to brush us. But it was Japan that got the pick. So I went that way because I was on the way home. But no, I was close, and I've always been quite intrigued by the Leinster setup. I had a coach who coached me at the Brumbies who headed there, I think Party Pickles, Matty O'Connor, which you guys know probably pretty well. And obviously a lot of great Aussies have played there at Leinster, likes of Fards and Rocky. Dougie, so
Lottie Takiri,
and obviously talking to you, Mads, in our time in France, how much of a professional setup it was, it kind of was always of interest to me, but never really panned out, mate.
Yeah, just the Lions, lads, just to touch on a bit of the Lions stuff, because obviously we can say what we want about it, but was there any surprises? Have you kept an eye on it, Adam, or would you even be keeping a close eye on what's happening this side of the world rugby wise?
Mate, casted a bit of an eye over it. No, I'm probably not in a position to share too much insight on that, mate. I'm on this side of the world. We're just kind of focusing on getting a training on our Super 73s at the moment.
What was it like, Sue, for you when the Lions came to Australia? What was it like being on the other side of it?
Epic. I mean, it's one of those series that every player wants to be a part of, and I felt really fortunate enough that I was playing when the time the Lions came to Australia. I mean, obviously the build-up and the atmosphere. I remember at the time just thinking, like, this is what it's all about. This is what playing rugby is all about. The first game at Suncorp was a full house, and the atmosphere and the energy was just electric. We fell short. We got one back the next week in Melbourne, and then the final, which was such a big hype, didn't go our way, obviously. But, reflecting back, it was an amazing experience, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think from both sides, they said that was possibly one of the best Lions tours. Obviously being in Australia, it's such a great country to visit, I'd say. What was it like support-wise? Did you feel that the Lions supporters had got over there and there was a good mix?
There was a really good mix. I mean, there were a lot of Lions supporters and we were expecting that for sure. I mean, I remember looking around the stadium down there in Melbourne, it was half yellow, half red. I mean, the Lions always get the support, and that's what makes the series so special, is just that atmosphere that I touched on earlier.
Yeah, for sure.
You're over there, Adam, with a couple of lads with Matt Giddo, so well, but you and Scotty have played together for quite a while. What were your earliest memories? Was it against each other? Was it playing with each other in rugby?
I played against you. I think you were at Brumston, maybe.
I might have played you club footy first. I think you might have been at the Norths. I played you you would have come back from Super Rugby for Norths. I would have played you. I was playing for Ringer. I was like a rake, though, at that stage. Like, not much has changed, but it's pretty...
You are now, too. Just a bit more of a belly on
it. Yeah, a bit more belly. ET.
Dad bod.
Obviously would have played a couple of big games, and that was obviously a huge rivalry with Brumbies Waratahs and still is now. So, that was probably the peak, like the Reds and Brumbies are now, probably the Waratahs and the Brumbies were in my time back in Australia.
Mm. It must be nice to have one of your buddies over there, though, Adam, in Matt Giteau. You know, obviously cool to go to a new environment and all the rest, but to have a familiar face, you guys seem to get on great.
Yeah, it's special, mate. Like, I mean, you kind of establish and develop relationships over rugby career, really special ones. And, I mean, the fact that I'm now back playing with him on this side of the world is awesome. And he's a big reason why I came over too, knowing that he was agreeing to terms as well. And then also I've got David Dennis here that I'm really, really good mates with, who I spent some time with at Tars back in the day. So, I mean, like, for us, you know, treating it like our last year of footy, playing with some really good mates in America, I mean, it doesn't get much better.
Yeah, it looks like it's a real player-led group. You know, is it very much, obviously, the head coach and whatnot, but is this very much the players driving everything over there?
I mean, the coach obviously oversees most of the work. I mean, he's very passionate about his job and he's a great coach, but I think he's given us free rein in terms of building our own culture, and that's something that we've done really early, done really well. And, you know, that's half the battle these days in performing well, is making sure the group gels and gets along. And we're putting a lot of work into our socials, as you can see, not in terms of online, but, you know, getting together off the field and making sure that we're developing those relationships.
Yeah, it looks like that.
Speaking of socials off the field, there's we have a line here that said this. Drew Mitchell was on the show here last year, man, another man you know very well. And we'd like to know how he ended up as a celebrant for your wedding.
Oh, you want the real story? Why not? So basically, there was one night we were kind of back in Sydney in Bondi when Drew and I were living together. I started seeing my now wife, Anna. And we have an open door policy at home. So which Drew established really early. So if the door was closed, obviously there were funny things happening. But anyway, he came home one early morning, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and the door was closed. And he came barging through and was, you know, touching on the fact that the rules are rules, and it was an open door policy. And obviously I was in bed with Anna. Anyway, he jumped on top and he proceeded to set up a scenario that, like, Anna was giving birth and he was delivering the baby, which was a pillow at the time. And he put it to us. He gave us an ultimatum. He said, look, if you guys are going to be serious together moving forward, I have to do one of two things. I can either deliver your first baby or I can be celebrating at your wedding. And obviously it was going to be the latter.
And he did a fantastic
job.
So that's
how it basically came about. Oh, he did an incredible job. He did an incredible job. He did a course back here in Oz, touched up on his celebrant skills and got over to France and he delivered.
Mm. In 35 degree heat. I remember sitting in at the wedding and typical Paddy, like, I was sweating so badly. And but I had prepared. And I had, like, I think 3 shirts in the car ready to go. But my shirt was actually the least of my worries. When I stood up, I'd sweated through my grey suit, through the crack in my trousers. So I'm
Grey is a poor choice of colour, man.
Very poor choice of colour.
In 40 degree heat.
I've actually seen some
but
of
you
the...
You did look good.
I've seen some of the stuff with you, Drew Mitchell and Matt Giteau. And honestly, you know, you're obviously 3 best mates, but I'm pretty sure if I was that tight with any other lads, my missus would be potentially seeing a counsellor about it, you know?
Yeah, we certainly push the boundaries. I mean, the girls are okay with it.
Yeah.
And tell me, Swoop, how's backline wines going?
Shit house.
It's a good drop, I hear.
It's going all right. It's a beautiful drop. It's absolute mother's milk fudge, you know that. We've got a Shiraz and we've got a Cab Sav from the Adelaide Hills, McLaren Vale. It's going really well, but just unfortunately, myself and Gitz have moved over this side and Drew's really busy with his Channel 9 commitments. So it's been really hard to kind of engage in that in the business side of things. So we've just done the 1 year, one vintage, and we'll wait until we get back to see where we move forward with backline wines.
Nice.
We're going to move back to Scotty for a minute because I want to kind of ask you, you know, what your favourite memories were from moving over the side. You know, you came over here with your missus. You've had two sons here who are will have Irish passports, which is pretty cool. You know, what were your best memories from your time in Leinster?
Yeah, well, I have to say the birth of my sons, but in terms of a playing perspective, I think obviously Bilbao was a massive day, but I think the semi-final, I think before that was Scarlett's when you went off with you did your hamstring and the scoring in the corner. It was one of my great memories. I think I sent you the photo when you did retire, but you diving over the corner in the sun and, you know, the crowd was amazing that day in the Aviva. And it was one of our best performances we've had, and that's what I was really focused on, because we went to Bilbao and we didn't actually play very well, so we felt like kind of got away with it a bit in Bilbao, but in that week versus Scarlets, we prepped really well, came out, played really well, and that was just such a satisfying feeling in front of our home crowd as well.
Yeah, doing the double, I always found like you an interesting character from a rugby perspective, because whether you were kicking lumps out of someone or someone was kicking lumps out of you, you were generally smiling on the field. Actually, always, for such a prickly guy, the way you played, you were actually the easiest place to get under your skin was actually the golf course. Genuinely, as in any time we were against each other, proper competitive, you know, we could end up like, we wouldn't be talking a whole lot in the car park, you know. Yeah.
Man, you've had a few scraps nearly on the course, but
how good's a golf scrap?
Yeah. Well, the first time I played with you, you didn't pick me up, so that was a bit, you were meant to pick me up, remember? Ninth stuff. And
yeah, true.
Had a few too many pints the night before and missed the pick up. So I thought I was getting hazed the first time I met you.
It's a good first impression.
Standing out the gate of my complex waiting for you to pick me up with my golf bag for 40 minutes.
The pissing rain.
Yeah, the pissing rain in Dublin. It was great.
That's Zaire Golf. Do you follow that Zaire Golf, Adam, on Instagram?
Am I, sorry?
The Zaire Golf page on Instagram. They've got like these videos.
Oh, I'm not aware of that.
Oh, you'd be all over this, Swoop. It's all like, it's golf obsessed, and it's, you know, funny, different kind of mannerisms on the golf course, different mistakes. Generally, guys making a show of themselves and just being passionate about getting out for their round of golf at the weekend. You'd be all over it.
Oh, yeah, like a cheap suit.
Do you have a four ball over there that you get to play with? Obviously, Dave Dennis is a tidy golfer.
Yeah, very tidy golfer, single figures. No, we haven't had a chance yet. I mean, because we've kind of, we've been on a bit of a journey so far. I mean, we started off in Maui together, which was a good result. And then we had to move up to Oxnard and sit in, get into a bit more of a bubble format. So we spent a couple of weeks up there, and we've only just recently got back to LA about 5 weeks ago. So we haven't really had a chance to hit the golf courses here, but I'm sure there's a few tidy options, that's for sure.
So what's the rest of your season look like there, or where is it at? Because being honest, like, we don't follow really the league over there, but I'm just wondering, like, are you halfway
doesn't
through?
Doesn't even know the name of it, the MLR.
The league.
LA Giltonines.
How the season's looking like, we're mid-season at the moment, so we're on the downhill, which is nice. We're sitting top of our conference, which is a great position to be in, but we've got some really tough games coming up. Actually, we're playing on Wednesday, so that's a pretty short turnaround. We played last night, training tomorrow, and travel down to Austin on Tuesday. And I tell you what the challenging thing is with traveling over here in the States is that because you're playing all over America, it's like door to door, it's like 12 hours. Like, I mean, it is a long day and you're still in the same country by the time you get to the hotel. That's hard to kind of get your head around. But with that said, you know, you're visiting awesome parts of the States. We've been in New Orleans. We've been in Houston. We're in New York last week. And on Tuesday we're going back down to Austin, Texas. So
it's similar to the league over here. There's two different conferences, and then is it top two play semi-final, you know, when you get to the end of the season?
When we get to the end. So it's basically we're in the West Conference and one plays two in the semi and of your same conference, and then you'll obviously meet the winner of the other respective conference in their semi in the final.
Brilliant.
What about you, Scotty? What's the last few weeks looked like for, I know Leinster in the Rainbow Cup, there's an outside chance of finals, but it's kind of outside, isn't it, at this stage?
Yeah, you know, it's waiting. We kind of, there's, I think there's three teams in finals at the moment, so yeah, we just got to keep playing well. So boys did a good job versus Ulster on Friday night, and then they'll play. We play again on Glasgow in a couple of weeks. So take the week off this week and enjoy my last kind of week off as a player. So, and then we'll build towards those games. So yeah, it's a different kind of league. It's be great to get through it and play one of the South African sides if you get the opportunity.
Yeah, it'd be a nice way to finish. Is it? What way is it going to be structured then? Is it just?
I think they're trying to get the South Africans up into Europe. So right. From the mail is that I think the top team out of each conference will play each other once. So on the 19th of June there. So
I actually only found that out today. I thought it was the top two from Europe were playing against each other. But obviously I'm wrong, and it doesn't.
Well, I might be wrong. It might change again. Well, so.
I don't think Ulster are going to make the final this year. Anyway, we're 3-0. But yeah, it's been a funny competition. Like Treviso, I think are top of the league now. They're 3-3. They've got two more games to go. But yeah, it's going to be a battle. Like there's probably four or five different teams that can still be top of the, you know, effectively the European conference. And then I haven't been following the South African teams. I know the Bulls are going well there. They're a very good side.
I know you don't want to say it, but like, because you're still playing. But being honest, basically, Adam, there's this tournament that's been thrown together at the end of this season, which has been the longest season of all time for these guys. Because I had actually retired in October with 3-month extension on my contract, but these boys have been playing pretty much for a year and a half with a little bit of a break, you know. And then it's all been rolled into so our regular European and Pro 14 season finished. And they've produced this new competition called the Rainbow Cup. And the format of it is just, like, it's changed, you know, every second week. It's actually even quite hard to follow.
Yeah, it's hard to follow as a player. Like, I can only imagine what it's like for the supporters. But, yeah, look, it's going to be rolled out, and there's going to be four South African teams included next year, and that's going to be a full league season. And you know, I'm sure that will work well. But they've really tried to just shoehorn a bit of a competition in at the end of the season, and it's been hard to follow as a player, let alone as a supporter.
Well, please God, there'll be
future to Cape Town for the lads.
Yeah, in the future it would be nice. But listen, please God, Scotty, you know you get a. Another couple of good days out in the RDS, and maybe Penny can be there with the lads as well. And Adam, best of luck with the rest of your season. Thanks a lot for coming on the show, guys. That was really enjoyable. Cheers, guys, and cheers to everybody for watching and listening. A big thanks to producer Pat, Paul, Colm, Anthony, Dermot, and everyone helped getting the show together. This is House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.